What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're gonna finally talk about a win in Washington. It's been a minute. The last time that we talked about a win was before the election. It had been a while, but we're back today. We're talking about a win. That doesn't mean that we're not talking about losses, because with that win, we're gonna talk about three more losses, because that's just what happens here. But nonetheless, the Wizards broke the losing streak at 16 games, a streak that I thought had the legs of reaching that of last year's Detroit team for the NBA record at 28, but it didn't. And it came against an unlikely opponent as well. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about some bigger overarching themes, trade deadline coming up. Some guys not eligible for trade, like Valanciunas. Want to talk about that. I want to talk about Jordan Poole dropping 39 against Denver and how good he's been. Obviously losses to Boston. Give you an update on the tank standings, like I do every episode, to see where the Wizards are in relation to other teams that might be in that top four, top five range. Look at the Wizards' upcoming schedule and some overarching themes of the season. But that's gonna be the agenda of this episode. The first thing, though, that I want to talk about is this inefficiency graphic that I saw on Twitter about a week back, and 4 or 5 days back from Kirk Goldsberry. He posts a lot of graphics about the NBA and all that type of stuff. This one was an efficiency landscape of the league. So it's got an offensive efficiency and a defensive efficiency, two axes, and a bunch of teams. All the teams' logos are displayed throughout it. It gives you their net rating on offense and their net rating on defense as well, and kind of gives you a gauge of how efficient they are on offense and on defense. The caveat is, if you look at the bottom left, the Washington Wizards logo is the only one that's omitted from this chart. And the reason is because they are so inefficient, they're so bad at everything, that their efficiency is literally off the page. It can't fit on the page how inefficient they are, defensively, offensively, however you want to shape it. That's how bad they are. And so that was, what I want to start this episode off with. That was kind of a funny kind of summarization of the season. And, despite being, having the worst roster in the league, having a lot of young guys, the fact that your inefficiency is literally off the charts bad, can't even fit on the page with the rest of the league, that's how you know it's bad. Really bad. And so that's kind of a baseline of where the Wizards are at a couple, 20, 30 games into the season. And so next up, I kind of want to pivot to the Denver win. I know I haven't recorded. I think this is going to be the first one in 2 weeks. I apologize, finals and all that. A lot going on, but we're back and we're discussing this win against Denver. And now the win wasn't yesterday or just in recent news. The win came back in earlier December on the 7th, so about 10 days ago at the time I'm recording this. But the Wizards snapped their 16 game losing streak. And for when I posted this online, it was, who which game on this calendar, on the schedule, do you think the Wizards will break their losing streak against? And everyone was saying the two games we have against Charlotte, that the Wizards would break their losing streak then. But they do it against an unlikely opponent. And now, granted, you gotta remember that, while Jokic put up 56, a career high, 56-point triple double, he was absolutely dominant. No Aaron Gordon for Denver and no Jamal Murray for Denver. And look, I don't know if this was like a, I don't think they're injured. I think this was like a game they thought they could buy some rest and dominate an inferior opponent, but the Wizards came out and were basically like, look, we have a good chance of ending this streak here, and let's do it. And they did. They had a really great night pretty much all around. You can point to a lot of different people. Obviously, Jordan Poole with 39 on the night. That's who people are going to look at. Not just 39, 8 assists to go with it as well. He was a plus 8, 9 of 20 from 3. 23 pointers is outrageous. That's a wild amount. But look, you're making 45% of them. That's a good clip. I'm fine with that, especially coming from your leading scorer, your number one option on the night. That was awesome to see Jordan Poole, obviously, have a breakout game. His best game as a Wizard, I think, as well, all around, contributing to winning both ends of the floor. I'm so really happy with Jordan Poole's performance there. You also got to talk about Valanciunas, because these last couple games, he's been really building that trade value, that trade stock, and I think that's the reason he's playing. I think I easily put the Denver game as Valanciunas' best game of the season. 20 points on 8 of 15, efficient 8 of 15 from the field, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 blocks. For a guy that's not heralded for his defense, and granted, Jokic put 56 on his head, like, he did what he could. You know, I didn't think it was Jokic dominating him because Jonas Valanciunas isn't a good defender. And that's not to say that I think Valanciunas is a good defender, because I don't think he is. I think he's very poor lateral quickness, you know, not the most agile or athletic in terms of getting out on the perimeter to stretch bigs. He could rebound defensively. That's kind of what he gives you. I think Jokic is the best player in the league, the best players the league has seen in years. Like, he's dominant, and he showed that. And, like, I don't think for a majority of his points that it was the defender's fault, whether it was, you know, Valanciunas checking him, whether it was, you know, Gil or one of the backup bigs checking him. Like, there's nothing a majority of the league can do when this guy is on, and he's on a lot. So look, that's fine. He's an incredible player. He's gonna drop 56, but I think that was a good game plan for Brian Keefe. Keefe's gotten a lot of flack this year for the team not playing well, and rightfully so. I think it's deserved. I think he hasn't had the team playing well defensively at all. Offensively, very inefficient. Some nights, most nights, they come out flat and don't know what to do. Early timeout, and from that point on, it's a blowout loss. But the game plan from the get-go, it seemed, was like, okay, no Murray. Okay. You're not going to give me Aaron Gordon. Okay. You can have Jokic, and I'm going to let him get his, but, like, you want Christian Brown to beat me, Jorlen Strother at 18, like, Russell Westbrook, Michael Porter Jr., fine. Like, go for it. You can beat me. I'm going to let Jokic get his, and other than that, I'm just going to say, look, you know, if Michael Porter Jr. hits a shot down the stretch, fine. If other guys step up, you know, alongside Jokic, fine. But make them step up. You know, let Jokic get his, but he can't score 123 points and outscore the Wizards. And so when you look at it like that, I think the game plan for Brian Keefe was pretty solid, and it worked. You know, the Wizards, a bit of a lapse in that third, outscored by 6. The Nuggets cut it to 4, a lead that was once 18. But the Wizards bounced back. They held strong. Jordan Poole carried, and this was a great win all around. And for all my people that were so worried after that Atlanta Hawks game, the back-to-back wins, the Wizards lose 6 straight since then. I told everyone, don't panic. This team sucks. They're not good at all. And you'll wait. And they lose 16 straight. But look, you got to win one at some point. You string together, you know, some wins throughout the season to keep not only, like, the fan base sane, but, like, the players and the coaches sane. Like, they're competing and working every day and every night. A win here and there isn't going to hurt you, and it's a nice confidence boost. So moving on after that Denver game, and I don't want to harp on this stuff too much because I understand, but at the time of recording this, it's kind of obsolete, kind of old news. But I did want to hit on that. You know, very impressive from Poole. Reality strikes back. I mean, the next 3 games, the Wizards, 30-point loss to Memphis without Ja and without Bane. I mean, that was just disgusting. That game was not even close. Again, ball was tipped, game was over. Jaren Jackson Jr. lit him up. You know, just not what you're looking to see, realistically. Not what you want. You know, Alex Saar returned in that game. He looked okay, but still, you know, getting beat individually. I don't think Alex Saar has been bad defensively in terms of like counting stats. Like, he's getting a lot of blocks, he's gotten some steals, and there's some good plays, but he's got a long way to go, especially with his individual one-on-one defense. You look at the guy across from him most nights, and he's probably at 20, you know, plus points, 8+ rebounds, and he's having an efficient night. And that's because they're good, but also because I don't think Alex Saar is strong enough, big enough, smart enough on defense to kind of figure this stuff out. And he will, but I do think it's got to be mentioned, at least noted, that while Alex Saar, you know, has gotten blocks and he's had some highlight reel plays and he hasn't been terrible defensively, he hasn't been great either. And that's going to come over time. No need to panic, but it did need to be mentioned. And it was kind of, you know, put on display both games against Memphis, because Jaren had like 39 the last time they played in Memphis this year. And of course, you know, comes into this game and dominates as well against Saar. So that was the Memphis game. I don't really have much. It was non-competitive. Cleveland is as well non-competitive. I just want to say this real quick. For the NBA, that was cruel. You know, you have your in-season tournament. You only schedule 80 games, and then you add 2 for the teams that don't make it for when you play your semifinals and finals in Vegas. For the league to look at the Wizards, and by the way, at the time they added these games, they were, I think the Wizards had lost 14 in a row.
For them to sit there and say, let me give them at Cleveland and home against Boston for their two extra games. Like, I get it. Like, I'm sure it's random and I don't know how they do it, but that's, for a team that really needed to win at that point, you gave them the number one and number two teams in the East, the number one and two teams in the league right now, and said, here, oh, you're struggling. Go get killed on these nights and then you can resume your schedule. And that's kind of that's what happened. I mean, look. Last time the Wizards went to Cleveland, they lost by 31. It was uncompetitive, and at just a really, really low point in the season. Corey got hurt, Keyshawn George got hurt, Malcolm Brogdon left with an injury. The Wizards lost by 30. I think that was their 13th straight loss. So like really dark, low night of the season. And honestly, they go back to Cleveland. You're expecting, they're gonna lose, right? But like I've been saying all season, it's not that you lose, it's how you lose. And the Wizards lost this game in a way that fans can sit back and say, you know what? That's a good loss. That, we were in it the entire time. They pulled away at the end, which wasn't ideal, obviously. But, they were competitive. And there were a lot of good, individual performances. And you had a lot of injuries entering as well. Entering the game against Memphis, you had Kuz, Kispert, George, Sarr, Brogdon, Bay, and Vucevic out. Didn't play. And then you go to the Cleveland game, and it's a pretty similar story. I mean, Alex Sarr returns from injury. I think I said he returned against Memphis. That's my bad. He returned against Cleveland. But at the same time, you got a bunch of guys out, and you go into that game against Memphis, you get blown out. And you really need to figure it out. And then you go into the game against Cleveland with still some injuries, no Kuz, no Kispert, no George. And you play competitive. Very competitive. You were in it for the first half. You went entered half down by three. Alex Sarr, 5 of 6, 11 points. Bilal Coulibaly with 10. And then, you go down 7 entering the fourth. And like you're in it the entire time. And like Wizards fans, Wizards, like, they're gonna lose. But it's how they lose. And they ended up losing by 10, I think. Yeah, 115 to 105. But there were some positive takeaways from this performance. Apart from the fact that they were competitive on the road against a great Cavs team, Bilal Coulibaly returned. At the beginning of the season, Bilal was averaging 18.5 points for the first 10 games. The next 10 games, averaging under 10, shooting really inefficient from both the field and from three. Just really had no offensive confidence whatsoever. And then you started to see him build it. He had 19 against Memphis, an efficient showing. And then he comes out against Cleveland, very aggressive as well. 27 points to go along with 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Really, really took the game under, his control and tried his best to be a focal point offensively and not just let the game come to him, but go and take it, be aggressive. And look, you got to think that that has been a direct result of Kyle Kuzma being out of the lineup. I mean, and I'm not saying this to like add on or pile on to the Kyle Kuzma needs to be traded fan club. I'm not doing that. But what I am saying is it does appear, at least from the surface, that Bilal Coulibaly plays better and is more aggressive when Kyle Kuzma is not in the lineup. And when Kyle Kuzma is in the lineup, Bilal Coulibaly takes a back seat, becomes just a defender that maybe hits a shot here and there. And that's not what the Wizards wanted. Hinders his development. It's not what you're trying to get out of Bilal. And so that's just, I think Wizards fans have seen it. I've seen it as well. And with Kuzma out, it seems like Bilal's kind of picked it up, figured it out these past three, four games, which is a welcome sight. Because if you remember last season, Bilal had a great start to the season. Like 15, 20 games in, he was shooting 40% from three. He was having a solid year for a rookie. And then he just fell off until he got injured and was out for the year. He never really recovered. And then this year he starts good, has a bit of a fall off, but he's recovering. And that's what you like to see in the second year growth. He's figuring it out. He got knocked down, but I'm sure he got in the film room, got in the gym, figured it out, and now he's like, okay, you're gonna defend me like this, I can do this. Oh, you're gonna take away my shot? Okay, I'm gonna drive. Here's how I draw fouls. And so that's kind of what he's figuring out. And so it's nice to see him bounce back from a really bad 2-3 week stretch. And kind of reemerge as a focal point of this offense the last 2 to 3 games for the Wiz. Poole at 17, Justin Champagne at 16. Now I'm going to talk about him more later in greater detail, but man, has he been impressive? Has he taken the starting role in stride? Has he taken this role, this rotation spot in stride with all these injuries, to the point where I I don't think you can take him out. I don't know if you're Brian Keith, how you can sit there, look at how great he's played on both ends the last three to four games, and say, you know what, we're going to go to somebody else. And I'm sure that'll happen. You know, once Kyle Kuzma's back, Giampaolo's gone, he's on the bench. And now I hope when he's on the bench, he's playing a lot, and he's not just relegated back to that 11th, 12th man. I hope he is that backup forward, because he deserves it. Even when Keyshawn George gets back, like, you want to play George as well, and you still can, but Champagne has earned that spot. You should not take it away. That's bad culture. That's bad precedent to set when someone comes in, plays really well, and you just take him out because, oh, that guy's healthy, even if he's not playing well. So I think he deserves a spot. But the Cleveland game, that was one that the Wizards can keep their head up high. You know, didn't get the win, but like I said, those are the losses that fans can get behind. You know, great compete, great hustle, great effort all night by the Wiz. Just, you know, didn't have enough. And when you say, you know what, they played great, they just didn't have enough, that's tanking, but to a T. Like, yeah, you tried, and you had a lot of great performances. Young guys played well. You competed, but again, like, Cleveland is just a juggernaut. They're great. Boston is just really good. Like, those games, like, just be competitive. You know, try and show effort and be in the game. You don't have to win, but the Cleveland loss is kind of exactly what Wizards fans want. Bilal Coulibaly, like I said, are tremendous again. Career high 5 threes, 5 of 8 from three. Efficient as well from three. So over 50% against Cleveland. You're really solid defensive team there. Bilal dominated. Best player on the Wizards that night. So really, really good to see for Wizards fans. And like I said, Justin Giampaolo against Cleveland, 16 points, 8 rebounds on 7 of 13 from the field. So he scores, he grabs boards. He averaged like 11 rebounds or 12 rebounds per game in college. So he's a great rebounder for his size. 7 of 13 for the field, very efficient, and was the only Wizard that finished with a positive plus minus. That's key. You know, everyone else was a minus. He was a plus. Clearly, some good things were happening when he was on the court. Over his last four games, and this is accounting the game against Boston, he was averaging 15.5 points, 7.5 rebounds on 55% from the field. I mean, how can you look at those numbers and say, you know what, I'm going to go a different direction? You can't. You simply can't. He's been so impressive, and I think that type of performance needs to be rewarded. So that brings it to the Boston game, which was Sunday. Kyle Kuzma out, Corey Kispert, George, Malcolm Brogdon with a hamstring, and Sadiq Bey still with that ACL, all out. That was a seventh straight game that Kuz missed, fifth straight for both George and Kispert. And I will mention, I saw today from Josh Robbins reporting, Kuz did practice. I think Kispert and George did as well. I'm not entirely sure about that, but I know Kuz did from Josh's reporting. Didn't hear much about Brogdon. Honestly, and this is a hot take, and I don't want to speculate, I guess. Like, I don't know. But like, Malcolm Brogdon had like a 5 to 6 game stretch when he came back from injury where he was the best player on the floor. I mean, probably averaging around like 16 to 18 points, 5 to 7 assists, a couple of rebounds, like efficient shooting. He was great. And now he has hamstring tightness ever since the Cavs game. You know, he's missed a good portion. And what was weird about that injury is that he got injured. It was like they called it like a knee thing against Cleveland. And then he like returned and he played the rest of the game against the first game against Cleveland, when George got hurt along with Kispert, and he came back. And then we just heard the next day that he had hamstring soreness. So I don't really know if he just like re-aggravated it, or it was just like an accumulation of the last like 5, 6 games and the hamstring sore, and we haven't heard anything since. But like Malcolm Brogdon, I guess in a 6-game span did enough, maybe the Wizards think, to like build his trade value enough and kind of show like, look, if I'm healthy, this is what I am. But if I'm a contender, I'm looking at it like, look, I don't want to trade a couple second round picks for this guy if he's just going to be hurt the entire season. And that's kind of what Brogdon's been. He's been hurt the entire season. Like, he's been hurt for the entire most of the season for a lot of teams. And that's been the real knock on him. It's never been production. It's been availability. And he hasn't been available. So if I'm a contending team, that like kind of scares me a little bit. But yeah, the Boston game, like I said, same with Memphis. It was one of those games where it was over before the jump ball was even thrown. Like, it there was no point in, like, you could have just said, you know what, don't play this game. Boston wins by 15 points. And you would have been like, yeah, you know, 99% of the time, like, you're right. That you know what's going to happen. It's just, how does it happen? How do we get to that 15 plus point Wizards loss? And so, look, it was kind of competitive in the first couple of minutes. I mean, Bilal Coulibaly again came out, lights out, 11 points on 4 of 5 from the field and 3 of 3 from three in the first 6 minutes. Now, he didn't score again in the first half. He took maybe two more shots. It was very non-aggressive, I'd say, and the rest of the game, which I didn't like. But a great start for Bilal. The Wizards were close. I had 15-10 lead, and then Boston just went on a huge run, 44-27 in the second quarter, getting whatever shot they want, 67-52 at half, and yeah, it kind of ended. I mean, it was 103-88. I tweeted this out loud. Let's go Celtics chance in Capital One Arena. I mean, pretty upsetting. You don't want to see that, but it happens every time the Celtics take over, and it's going to keep happening until the Wizards are good and fans come back, and it just sucks. To recap, Bilal with 19 points, Champagne 13 points, 14 boards, Poole with 21. Another great performance, 14 boards from Justin Champagne. That's your small forward. Coulibaly, 19 points. That's 19 points, 27 points, 19 points over his last three games. Very impressive from Bilal. But again, just another non-competitive loss. Expected loss, but never competitive at all. One thing I did want to mention, and this tweet went viral, blew up. It's got like a couple hundred thousand views, but like, I saw this during the game, and apologies, like if you saw it on my Twitter, I don't know how to clip things. I don't know how to do that. So like I'll just video it on my laptop, like crop it and post it. But there was a play that I was when I was watching the game, I had to rewind it like three times to make sure I saw what I saw before posting it. There was a play where Jordan Poole was isolated with Peyton Pritchard on the right side at the top of the 3-point line. He dribbles to his right, crosses over. And Peyton Pritchard goes flying. I don't know if it was an ankle break or a push off, but it wasn't called. He has a wide open three for about 2 seconds. And instead of taking the three, Jordan Poole points at Peyton Pritchard, goes to take it, realizes that he wasted too much time. Sam Hauser's closing in and contesting, so he has to pump fake and pass it off to Bob Carrington on the perimeter. Wizards end up turning the ball over. Now they got it right back. They got a layup out of it. But it's just like those kind of mistakes on like a contending team. It's like, yeah, that sucks, but you probably won the game and you're doing great and it's not that deep, but like it's a compounding of errors, and it's at the same point the Wizards were down 16 at this point. You're 3-20 at that point, and like you're really showboating after an ankle breaker down 16, when you're gonna lose the game, and then you don't even get the shot off. It's like, dude, I get it, you're a showman, you're having fun out there, but like you got a game to win. And I understand you're not, the Wizards don't really care about wins and losses, but it's just like culture-wise, that's your best player who crossed someone up, pointed at him, and then just like didn't have enough time, could have easily drained a wide open three, resulted in a turnover on that possession. Like, it's what you've come to expect, honestly, from this group. And it's again a compounding of errors. I don't know how big of a deal this would be if the Wizards were like 13-12. Probably a non-issue, but it's the fact that they are where they are. Jordan Poole has kind of done this before. And I mean, it was funny. Like, I was laughing about it. It's not that deep. But I obviously that's not ideal when you have an open three. You pass it up to point out a player and showboat, and you don't even get a shot off. Nonetheless, turn the ball over on the possession. Kind of summarizes the Wizards' season. So obviously, that's the recap of those couple of games. Nothing too exciting. I mean, the Wizards went 1-3 on that stretch, but they did win a game. So let's not pass over that fact that the Wizards won a game for the first time since before the presidential election. I mean, that's a while. Think about how long ago the presidential election was, and that's how long the Wizards, before December 7th, had to wait until they won another game. Not ideal, obviously, for fans watching. Ideal for the tank, but tough to go through. One thing I did want to mention, just some housekeeping, is as of December 15th, Jonas Valanciunas is officially available for trade. 32-year-old Wizard center, averaging 12.7.6 rebounds on 56% from the field, on a 3-year, $30 million deal. So easily tradable contract. The Lakers tried to sign him in the offseason. He decided to come to Washington. Lakers have been, linked to him throughout the season because they need a backup big. And that's kind of where we're at. Valanciunas can be traded now, and as you saw with Dennis Schroder, who just got moved to the Warriors midseason, I think some teams are going to start to, make some moves before the deadline. The Lakers are kind of falling apart at the seams now, and maybe they're like, you know what, we need some immediate help. We need another big that can relieve AD, and Valanciunas is probably the best big on the market. So that's where we are. I mean, David Aldridge came out and said the Wizards might want to keep Valanciunas for his veteran leadership alongside Sarr. I get it, I guess, but he's 32. Trade him. Start Alex Carr. I don't. You have Bagley still. You have Holmes. If you keep him, I think Valanciunas has done enough. I think you get value while you can. You move him. I don't. People were clowning on Lakers fans were clowning on me. Someone said, "Can the Wizards get a first round pick?" I said, "I got possibly." I didn't even say they could possibly. The Lakers have a couple, and I don't know. The Wizards just don't have to trade Valanciunas. They can keep him. He's on a 3-year deal, so maybe entice me to move that pick or to move that player. That's just a thought, but he's eventually eligible for trade. Obviously, you got to think they're going to move Kuzma and try to move Brogdon as well. And I've seen all of that, like all over Twitter, like the Wizards are lowering their asking price for Kuz, and the Wizards are doing this, and the Wizards are looking to get, gauge the market on Brogdon. Like, don't look at those reports. It's that dude Evan Sidery, who I honestly think has zero sources, and just a bunch of just like NBA Central stuff. Like, I could tell you right now, the Wizards are going to look to trade Valanciunas. They're going to look to trade Brogdon, and they're going to look to trade Kuz. It's very likely that after not getting two first-round picks last year, and Kuzma having one of the worst years of his career the last 4 years in DC, that they know they can't get two firsts, and they know he's not part of their plans. So let's try to get one, lowering their asking price again. Probably get what's going to happen at the deadline if they want to move him. So all these reports is like people just trying to engagement farm and get clicks for their stuff, and I get it. And some are true, definitely. I'm not dispelling them, but I don't think it's like any of these things are necessary. I think it's all stuff Wizards fans know, just rehashed in different wording and different reporting. So that's all you kind of need to know. But in terms of what else, that's kind of the games. I talked about Champagne, how he deserves a rotation spot. There was a stat. There was a funny stat Bleacher Report tweeted out that the Boston Celtics now have more wins, three, at Capital One Arena this season than the Wizards, who have two. And like this is a crazy stat. Like 25 games in the season. Like that's pretty crazy that another team has more wins 25 games in on your home floor than you. But when you consider the Wizards are the worst team in the league, they're actively tanking, and Boston has played the Wizards 3 times in Washington. You expect the Boston Celtics to win all of those games. So, like, again, it's crazy and it shows how bad the Wizards are, but I wasn't really moved or surprised by it. Maybe it's just because I'm numb to it and, like, I've been following the Wizards. Some people might just see that and be like, I didn't realize how bad the Wizards were. But they only have 2 wins at home this year. Only 3 wins total. One was at Atlanta. So, that was a funny stat, but I didn't think it really held the stature. Or the weight that Bleacher Report thought. But now an update on the tank standings. I know this is what everyone waits for a long time during these episodes to hear, because this is the reason for the rebuild for the tank is these tank standings. And a couple of themes of these tank standings over the last 2 weeks is big shout out to the Philadelphia 76ers. They were neck and neck with Washington, given a bit of a scare. But Embiid is hell. Well, now he's not. He broke his nose or something, but he's out for a week. But Paul George is back, looks healthy. Maxey's back. McCain's out, which sucks for him. He was having a great rookie of the year type year. MCL tear. He's out for a bit, but it looks like the Sixers are getting healthy. They've distanced themselves. I think honestly, they've got 8 wins. The magic number for the Wizards to feel comfortable, I think, is around like 10 to 11 wins. I think once a team hits their 11th win, I don't consider them a threat to Washington at all, because I don't think the Wizards are going to get there. Honestly, I don't think the Wizards are going to win 11 games, which is really sad now that I say that out loud. But at the same point, like I'm just being honest. That's my threshold. Like, Detroit Pistons, 11 wins right now, not a threat. 11 and 16, I think. Obviously, they're going to win. They're not going to lose out the rest of the season. But once you get to that 10-11 win mark, I'm like, okay. The Wizards aren't passing you. That's not an issue. Brooklyn there at 10 wins. Philly and Portland at 8 wins. Those teams are outpacing the Wizards, and I think they're going to win some more games. Definitely Philly. They'll get out of that hole. So I think that kind of leaves. You kind of got tiers of teams. You got your juggernauts at the front. That kind of spans from like Cleveland at 23-4 to like Golden State and like the LA Clippers at like 15-12. And then you got like Miami Heat at 13-11, all the way down to like the Sixers, really, and it's kind of like teams that are
a little bit over 500, slightly under 500, or have been really injured and are kind of making their way back. And they're all teams that are trying to contend and compete in that middle of the pack. So I don't think that would be an issue for the Wizards either. And that kind of leaves you with the bottom of the barrel teams, Washington, New Orleans, Utah, Toronto, Charlotte, and Portland. Charlotte, Portland, Toronto off 7+ wins. They have solid rosters. Charlotte wasn't bad until they got injured. They're 1-9 in their last 10, but LaMelo's back. Hopefully they'll rattle off some more wins. Portland's been playing a lot better basketball as of late. They should have had one against the Spurs that they blew. You got Toronto there that has a solid team. RJ Barrett's been playing well, but again, Scottie Barnes is out. Utah went from a team 2 years ago that was supposed to be tanking and was really frisky to a team that just sucks outright. They're terrible. And 5-20, you got to think they're probably tanking. But I didn't think Utah would be this much of a threat to Washington, and they are. They've lost three in a row. They are 5-20. They suck. And so them, New Orleans at 5-22, and then Washington at 3-21. I think that's your real comp for the number one pick, or at least for the worst record, I should say, because the lottery can go any way. But you see, Toronto, Charlotte, Portland, they're going to be bad, but like I think they'll get to maybe 20, 25 wins. Whereas the Jazz, the Pelicans, the Wizards, I think they'll be in the low to mid teens if they even get there. And so I think that's going to be the big comp. So Wizards fans, root for the Jazz whenever you can. Root for New Orleans whenever you can. Honestly, keep rooting for Charlotte, Toronto, Portland, Philly to kind of, extend that gap between them and the Wizards. And that's kind of the comp. It's a three-horse race for the number one pick, or at least for the worst record in the league, I should say. I keep having to correct myself because the NBA lottery is so corrupt and all that. But Utah. Honestly, I don't think Portland is as big of a threat as people think. Like, it sucks for Portland because they're so injured, like so injured. You don't know if they're actually this bad. But at the same time, Zion apparently isn't anywhere close to being back. Ingram's missed a lot of time. Murray just got back. McCollum just got back. And but even with them being back, they're not winning games. And so I think they're gonna kind of blow it up maybe at the deadline, which would be, not ideal for the Wizards who are trying to lose, but that's kind of an update on the Wiz. They got, a half game lead on New Orleans right now. They got a game and a half lead on Utah, and then it's kind of, separating itself a little bit from that point on. So that's the tank standings. I'm going to end it with the upcoming schedule, kind of see, where the Wizards are at in terms of the next couple of games. The last couple games, they have six more games remaining in this year, in 2024. Thursday, they have Charlotte at home. That's a spot where they could really win, but LaMelo back, they have Brandon Miller playing really well. I think the Charlotte Hornets are better. I think Kuz might be back, but still, like that's their really winnable game. That and when they play them on the 26th. But you got Charlotte at Milwaukee, and then at Oklahoma City. So that'll be a big loss. Last time they were competitive against Milwaukee, but they'll get killed. They'll get killed by OKC. And then another game against Charlotte, could be win. And then back-to-back home games against the Knicks, which is really neutral site games when they play the Knicks. And that's the 28th and the 30th. I could see the Wizards maybe going 1-5 in this stretch. If not, it's an 0-6. Maybe they, split with Charlotte. It'd be pretty sad if they lose both to Charlotte. But that's kind of the upcoming schedule. The Wizards aren't great. This is kind of a synopsis of the last 2 weeks. But that's kind of gonna do it for this episode. If you got any questions or if you want to, talk to me about anything I talked about, my DMs are always open. I always respond. Thanks again for listening to this episode. I'll be back on a more regular basis, at least once a week, starting from this point. But again, I appreciate all you guys for listening, and that's gonna do it for this episode. Go Wiz.